In the New Yorker magazine this week, writer Jelani Cobb comments on the Charleston shooting by connecting a history of racism in the U.S. with active white supremacist groups and concludes that whether Dylan Roff acted by himself, he was not alone. Roff was active on many of the websites and hate communities online that talk continually about white people being under siege, being taken over by blacks, that accused Barack Obama of leading a black army of world government against whites, among other provocative claims. Adam G. Klein is author of A Space for Hate, The White Power Movement's Adaptation into Cyberspace. He's assistant professor in communication studies at Pace University here in New York. Klein says the way the internet experience has deepened in the last two decades, there really are no such thing as loners in this world of imaginary race wars.
People like Dylan Roff have found an accessibility to these communities that they never would have found in the outside world. Online, everything seems a lot more normal. There's more of a political community, and there's a social network about it. So for someone like Dylan, anybody that has a racist inclination beforehand, they have a way to go online and feel as if this is a social experience. They go into these forums. The one I think he talked about being enlightened by was the Council of Conservative Citizens, mm-hmm. where there is, there's news, there's politics, there's chat rooms. But then beneath that is the subtext, the themes of, in his case, black on white crime, a lot of alarmist rhetoric and things that he can indulge in.
Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber, bounced around between militia groups where yep. he actually had an active presence and certain online sorts of groups that he participated in before he made his way to the Murrah Building and mm-hmm. committed, the worst act of terrorism, at least in that kind of that kind of bombing
right.
In U.S. history. And again, we're rethinking terrorism because of the racial incidents that we're looking at back through U.S. history. Is his trajectory similar to Roth's in any way?
In some ways, you could look at – he was inspired by – I think the book was The Turner Diaries,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
And that's a book about racial holy war
yeah.
that starts off with a sci-fi book in a way, but guys that are blowing up a federal building with fertilizer bomb material. And
so, a book you can buy today.
Yeah, yeah, a popular book. And so it's media at the end of the day. It's hard to – anytime you say, well, look, it's the fault of the internet. It's the fault of this author. But at the same time – when you look at someone like Dylan this week, he's inspired by a community. His manifesto reads as if he wants to become a hero to that community. So it forces you to look at this trajectory and to see, well, if he's trying to live up to something, was it there beforehand? Was it being kind of massaged? And what's between the lines of a website like the CCC website or Stormfront that on the surface looks – that doesn't look harmless, but it does look – there's no swastikas anymore. There's no burning crosses on these websites. They've done away with that.
They've got their First Amendment business in order. I mean, they're protected speech.
Sure.
But I'm wondering if there's a distinction that can be made, and do federal investigators make it, between active recruitment for a militia army where people can go and, camp out over the weekend.
Right.
Which was the case of the Aryan Nation in the old days and still exists now. But a different kind of recruiting, passive recruiting, where there's this place you can go online that suggests all kinds of options, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden it occurs to Dylan Roff to say, no one's doing anything but talking on the internet. Someone has to have the bravery to take it to the real world. I guess that has to be me. Mm. And it's kind of no different, passive recruiting versus active recruiting.
I think it's worse. I mean, passive recruiting gives you this feeling like it's okay, that if you're, if you're looking from it from the point of view of law enforcement, their job is in some ways harder. Because, how do they distinguish what would be fighting words, form of hate speech from 100 different news stories about black on white crime that I think are much more effective if you're someone who's feeding into this and looking for, that excuse, that reason to, validate your racism. You're going to see, well, that's a news story that came from – that actually happened as opposed to something that's a lot more – obvious hate speech.
Is it your impression that the internet gives these people more of a sense that there are no borders, that they're basically a white tribe fighting a war against non-whites?
Yes. I think that they have a sense of anonymity for one thing. You know, everybody, I think, is a different version of themselves online to some degree and how daring they are and how they communicate. But for someone with a racist inclination, that gives them what they've been seeking, and they can have that anonymity factor to protect them. However, I think that there's the other side of the spectrum in terms of law enforcement is there is a positive. They could also see more than they were never able to see before. We can put more, I think, of a finger on what we suspect is bubbling beneath the surface of society sometimes when we can see it in these websites. We could read these forums, and sometimes for every, you know, Dylan Ruff, there's been numerous cases, I think, of somebody putting something on Facebook that we've been able to stop before it happens.
Adam Klein is author of A Space for Hate, the White Power Movement's Adaptation into Cyberspace. He's assistant professor in communication studies at Pace University here in New York. Adam, thanks.
Thank you.